Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 48 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. My name is Ben Heisler. I'm happy to have you all with us for a really fun and insightful conversation with our friend Colleen Wolfe of the NFL Network. She's an absolute star there and somebody that I found to be really fun to talk to. We ended up diving into her transition from starting on the talk radio side into television and some of the early advantages that, helped give her a little bit of a boost in the process and what allowed her to sort of come up and remember the idea that it's okay, you know, not to take sports too seriously when you're putting together shows and having roundtables and discussions, that it's okay to have fun. We also got into some of her stories from her transition from radio to television and then to the NFL Network, some of her early influences along the way. And notably, and I found this story and really to be eye-opening, what last Thursday night was like when she got a chance to take us inside what she and her NFL colleagues were learning and seeing on the spot the moment that Browns pass rusher Myles Garrett attempted to just completely smash his helmet into the skull of Mason Rudolph of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So everything leading up to that point and then everything after, and the quick turnaround that they had, because remember, this is at the very tail end of the game, and they had a postgame show on the NFL Network coming up moments later. So the details from that story are absolutely fascinating. She laid it out in detail, and I'm excited for you guys to be able to get some insight into that. We also got into a wide variety of other topics, all of which you will hear shortly. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Awful Announcing if you'd like to follow me. You can do so over at Benny Heiss. AwfulAnnouncing.com is where you can find all of the outstanding work over on this platform. And I also want to welcome back our friend Ian Castleberry to the Awful Announcing family. He's got a great piece over on the 10 best sports movies currently available on Disney Plus, including a very surprising number one pick that I don't think many of you will see coming. So that story and much, much more available over at awfulannouncing.com. Last but not least, we always encourage you to tell your friends, help share this podcast if you enjoy the outstanding personalities that we have been fortunate enough to be able to have on the show, really in long-form conversation. These aren't just 5-10-minute hits. These are people that are very busy, that are opening up and sharing stories about their career, a lot of them to be personal stories, to give us insight into their growth and how they've come along in this business. So please feel free to rate and review the podcast in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts downloaded. All right, here we go. I'm excited. We get to talk to Colleen Wolfe today on the Awful Announcing Podcast. She, of course, with NFL Network. And should you find yourself tuning into that outstanding channel, you will see her on NFL Game Day Kickoff Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, along with Good Morning Football Weekend. And you can find that Saturdays at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then do not forget, because you already got the two, let's get the third, NFL Total Access Endgame after Monday Night Football. So basically, if there's weeknight evening football or Saturday morning content, you get to hang out with Colleen on your TV. She's also a great follow on Twitter at Colleen Wolfe. And don't forget, Wolfe is spelled W-O-L-F-E. Thanks for hopping on the show today. It's good to talk to you.
This is great. Thanks so much for having me.
So before we talk football and hear some stories from your career and get a sense of sort of how you came from this place in Philadelphia on the talk radio side and then work your way up for several years at NFL Network, because the stories here are awesome. I've gotten a chance to learn a little bit about you over the course of this. So I'm excited to hear those stories and be able to present them to our audience. But I want to know.
Oh, no. What are these stories?
No, nothing that you haven't told before. But
okay.
How many animals are currently in your house right now? Because if you follow Colleen Wolfe on social media, there's some sort of furry creature that's inevitably popping up to say hello.
This is a great question because I'm currently sitting in a dog bed with two animals. So that's the current number in this house. Although I was telling my husband last night that I may or may not bring home another animal in December for Christmas. But I'm also allergic to cats and dogs, so it's probably not the best plan that I have. But Look, I deal with it. It's fine.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Okay, so this is now blowing my mind a little bit. So you got the two animals there. You're allergic. Like, what is the life balance impact of having these animals at home while also potentially going out and sneezing quite a bit?
Right. So I was just like loving on them right before the podcast, which probably wasn't a great idea because now I'm super nasally. But I also have to get allergy shots because of them. But some people might think that's crazy, and it probably is. But I really love animals and I love my dogs. So you know what? I'll go the extra mile for them.
Is this like the what is it called? Hypoallergenic dogs that you have to, like, is there a certain limit on these dogs for you?
Listen, I'm not that fancy. I have two mutts that I rescued. We have no idea what they are or how old they are, but one is a boy and one is a girl, and that's basically the extent of what I know.
Gotcha. Because I'm full on team rescue pets. Like, I really am. Like, we're going to be up for another one soon. My wife, before she met me, rescued, I think the dog that she rescued was 6 at the time, so she's now 14. It's a Chihuahua Terrier, and she's getting towards the end of her run. So now I'm excited because at some point, even though when our current dog is no longer with us, I get to be involved in the decision process. And it's just such, it's so fun to be able to go and help see all these animals and know that you're helping to really put them in a fantastic place moving forward.
See, like, so when we rescued our first dog, it was, my husband was like, no, we live in an apartment. Like, we can't do that right now. And basically, like, if I didn't just go out and bring a dog home, we wouldn't have one. So it was Christmas. I have no idea how many years ago, probably like 9 years ago. And I had in my head this like grand plan of bringing home this really sweet dog who she's like black and white and really adorable, and putting just a big giant red bow on her. And it was going to be super sweet. And I was going to be like, Merry Christmas, John, we can have a dog. So that's what was in my head. But when I went to go get her, she's so sweet, but she was also really car sick. So she projectile vomited all over me and the inside of the car and herself. And so for 45 minutes, I drove basically like Heismaning her away from me while we were on the freeway. And then I got home and I had told my husband that I was out Christmas shopping. And I was like, okay, hey, like, can you help me come unload the car? And it was way less sweet and magical than I had envisioned, because John was like, what is this? Did you get us a dog? Is she covered in vomit? Was something dead in the car? What is that smell? So, but hey, it worked out, and now we're all together.
There you go. What was your family like when you were growing up outside of Philadelphia? Were you guys big pet owners? Were you big into sports? What were you into, and what were you like growing up in the Philadelphia area as a kid?
So I was we always had dogs growing up. I was a figure skater, so I would like get up before school, like 4 a.m. and go to the rink and skate. And then I would skate after school too. And it was awesome because I didn't have to take gym class ever. Even when I got to high school, I got like credits for going ice skating.
Oh, nice.
So I would be able to like come in late. They kind of like worked with my schedule, so I would be able to miss like my first class in the morning, so I could like be at the rink and then come in. And I competed. And I'm just like a super competitive person. I think that's sort of where it all started with figure skating. So I did that for a while and I hurt my back, so I couldn't keep skating, even though I do have my skates out here in California. And like every once in a while, I'll take them for a spin just to see where I am still. But we weren't like the biggest. My dad is not like a huge football fan. My mom actually is. And so my mom is like this crazy Eagles fan that just like, you can't even really be in the house with her when to watch a game, because she gets so into it that it's almost like a little too intense.
Oh, she turns into full on meatball.
Oh, like no question. I mean, it is just screaming and all sorts of profanities, things I've never even like knew were profanities before. Like that's where I learned everything from. So my mom is a huge Eagles fan, and she has all sorts of like crazy hot takes on different like coaches and teams. And she's really a trip. But my dad, he doesn't really know anything about football. So I kind of taught him like the down and distance. Like, I mean, we went like very basic. And now I'm like so proud of him because like a team will, they'll call a penalty and he'll be like, oh, well, they don't want that, right? They're going to decline it. And I'm like, yes, you're doing it, Dad. You're lying.
Have you had your mom on Good Morning Football yet to deliver some of those hot takes?
I haven't because it's very odd. She's super camera shy. So I don't know where I came from, but she doesn't like her picture taken. She gets really shy, like in front of the camera. She just like hates it. So I have to like sneak attack her and record her when she doesn't know that she's being recorded. And then I will play it on various podcasts.
That's a great idea. I did that to my wife once.
Yeah.
But I did it after. She's a diehard KU Kansas Jayhawks fan. And we did it coming back after the Jayhawks lost in Kansas City to go to the Final Four. And we played it on our radio show the next day. And shockingly, she was laughing about it. But at the time, she was really pissed.
Yeah. My mom still doesn't know that she's been on various podcasts.
Oh, good.
Like that.
Okay,
would
so that's
be,
even better.
That would be the end of it. Like, well, it's also illegal, I think. But listen, my mom's not going to press any charges. So I'm
right.
Not worried.
There, that's what you can bank on. I also read that when you were applying for schools after high school was done, that you were focused on art at the time. And so over the course of like the college application process, I imagine somewhere along the lines, you transitioned to some form of communication study, or did that not even begin until you started working at WIP? How did that transition sort of go over the course of your career?
Yeah, it didn't really start until I started working at WIP. Like, I had applied to all of these schools with my art portfolio, and then I ended up at Drexel, which was really kind of a fallback, and one of my best friends was going there. She was like, yeah, just apply to Drexel. The, like, application fee is free, and, like, I'll be there. So I was like, okay, cool. No problem. So then I had like my parents and my aunt and uncle, and everybody is based in Philly. And I had applied to all these schools that were like really far away, big state schools. And everyone's like, Drexel's really great. They have this co-op program. You go to school for 6 months and then you work for 6 months. So then by the time you graduate, you have a full-on resume and you have experience. So it's really easy, a lot easier to get a job at least. So last minute, I was actually over in Paris with my aunt and uncle, and like, let's be honest, they got me drunk, and I called my dad and was like, you know what, I want to go to Drexel, and this was like the night before the deadline, and my dad was like thrilled beyond belief, and he was like, no problem. So I had been like all set to go to ASU, and so he like quickly made all of like the changes. And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, oh no, I think I've made a terrible mistake. Wait a second. But I ended up going to Drexel. And when I got there, they were like, well, yeah, you can't take any art classes because you didn't apply directly to the school, like the art school. So you have to take a year of something else. Use your elective, take something easy, and then next year you can go into the art program. So I was like, okay, what should I take? And they were like, just take communications. So I ended up taking communications, and I was like, yo, this is super easy, and I think I'm just going to keep doing this. So it came time for me to do my first internship. And as a college kid, I just thought it would be really fun to work at a radio station because it just seems like, why not? I was in town and we had a family friend that worked at WIP, which is the main sports talk radio station in Philly. So I got an internship on the morning show. And honestly, like from the minute I walked in the door, that's when I knew that I wanted to do this. It wasn't even a question. I could not believe that people got paid to do this, that they were just messing around. They were laughing. They were arguing about just like weird stuff and the games and all the teams. And in Philly, like the Eagles and football are such a big part of just like the fabric of the city, and all of the teams are, but especially the Eagles. And so from that point forward, I sort of made it, it was almost like a challenge for myself. And I wanted to see if I could do it. I wanted to see if I could figure it out and learn everything I could learn and sort of compete in that arena. And that's sort of what I'm still doing to this day.
Well, I was going to say, because, excuse me, you've gone from like all these different roles in radio. And as a longtime former radio guy, it's always fun for me to hear about these stories of people really going outside the radio world and succeeding. But it's because of what they learned on the radio side. So, you know, how much did being both a radio talent, producer, you were a guest booker, you really sort of handled all these different sides. And even from the internship perspective, like that's where a lot of these like early opportunities started for you. What was it like trying to work your way up from the internship level to trying to get yourself on air and become a part of all the different sort of crazy and wacky bits that morning show and all the other shows were doing over there?
Well, it was like the morning show, they were really amazing advocates for me. So as soon as I got there, they immediately started kind of letting me, they would have me on for like different random segments and send me out to do different things and report. Like at one point, T.O. was going through his contract dispute when he was in Philly, and they had me stand on the corner of this like busy street in Philly, Fifth and Market, with a giant collection bin, and where I wore a sandwich board, I had a Salvation Army bell, I had a megaphone, and I was taking collections for T.O. so he could feed his children, because that was like his whole thing.
Then
they would just like send me out and do different bits based on what was going on in like the crazy Philadelphia media and sports landscape. And so from there, I was like, I don't want to move to a small market. I want to see if I can do it here, because I started to really just learn a lot of people and just network really well. And so I got the job as a guest booker, and that was at Comcast Sportsnet in Philly. And so that really helped me really network with a ton of people. And so I just slowly kind of kept convincing people to give me a job. And at the time, every single time I got the job, I was completely overmatched for the job. Like, I would be freaking out in my head. I remember when WIP finally let me do update shifts. I walked in, and the only thing I really knew how to do was turn the microphone on. It was like a giant on-off button. And I was like, okay, I can mash that down. That's the only thing I knew. I didn't know how to operate any of the board. And the guy that I was relieving, he had to leave right away. I forget why. It was like some emergency situation, and nobody else was there, and nobody could train me. And I was trying to figure out how to do this on my own. And I remember there was a Phillies game that was starting, and I had to record the game and cut all the highlights and cut all the sound bites and be able to have those for the show, especially the morning show the next day, in addition to writing my updates, recording those every like however many minutes, 20 minutes. And in between doing those, I was freaking out and melting down and trying to figure out how to like work all these programs and make it work. So every single kind of job along the way really was trial by fire. And it was a situation where I would like sort of have a meltdown and then figure it out and move on. And that's kind of been like my entire career.
Well, you were also talking about how what you enjoyed amongst many things working in sports radio was that, you know, they gave you these different opportunities and you're working your way towards it. But a lot of that show and a lot of the different shows at WIP don't really take themselves too seriously. And I'm wondering, as someone who's listened and viewed and integrate a lot of different sports media into your work now, are you surprised that so many places really do take themselves too seriously, that their hot take of whatever is going to be over the course of the day feels like the end all be all, and that you can't, like, it's all, you know what I mean? Like, to me, like, good radio was about the entertainment value and not necessarily convincing somebody that you're right.
100%. I cannot stand when people or a show or anything is like completely earnest. It drives me so insane. It's like, what are we doing here? All we're doing is talking about games and players and ridiculous situations, and you're supposed to be able to laugh at yourself on top of everything. I feel like self-deprecating humor is the best, and I don't know if that's because I don't know if that's like a regional thing, because it feels like an awful lot of people from Philadelphia are very sarcastic. Like, I love dark humor. I just feel like when I moved out to California, at first there was a lot of people who didn't really get it. They were like, oh, you're being too hard on yourself. So I'm like, no, that's a joke. Like, I don't actually feel that way. But it's like, I think a lot of that does come from the tone that they set at the radio station and WIP. And like, that really was my first exposure to that side of the business. And it taught me so much. It taught me to, I think, how to better like disarm people and how to better kind of charm people when you're talking to them. So it's not so confrontational a lot of times as it ends up being in sports for some reason. The debates end up getting so heated and so personal. And I don't really understand that because it's like, really, like, what are we doing here, guys?
Right. That's a really good point. Right. At the end of the day, we're still talking about sports. And I think that's a really good point, too, because especially on TV, when your time is so limited, I think having that experience on the radio side, knowing that you can turn it into a more conversational tone, because again, like how you're talking and how you're reacting to people, there's an element of theater of the mind. And so you can disarm somebody very quickly over the course of that. I have one last radio question for you because I'm totally nerding out on that side of it before we get into your transition in the TV. You know, obviously on the television side, there's starting to become a lot more representation and having more women on the sports media landscape, but you're still not seeing it enough, in my opinion, on the radio side. And I don't know whether that's due to a lot of the advertising demographics or whatnot, but was it tough for you, at least starting on the radio side, knowing that there wasn't a lot of other women that were there helping out, working through the on-air side? And I'm surprised, I guess I'm wondering, are you surprised that we haven't seen a lot more progress in that department?
I mean, unfortunately, I'm not really surprised because I feel like a lot of times, especially in sports, there's still a lot of like sexism, not necessarily on, you know, the corporation side, but honestly, I guess like everywhere, there's still just like a societal, I think, problem with that, like a systemic issue. And in radio, it's not a visual medium. And I think a lot of times, places get caught up in that, and that's why they don't hire women, because it's not as much of a draw, I think, if you can't unfortunately like see them, which is completely wrong. And obviously I don't agree with it all, but I think it's something that is slowly changing, but it's changing too slow. But when I was coming up, at least at WIP, I had Rhea Hughes, who was on the morning show, and she is a super strong woman who she didn't take any crap from anyone. And just seeing the way that she kind of owned that and the respect that she garnered from everybody on that show and the attitude that she had was so strong. And that always stayed with me. And that always kind of helped me, especially when I first started there, because I knew that if Rhea was able to do that, then I could do it too.
Sure.
And I think just having that representation is such an important thing, whether it is radio or television. And I think slowly it's happening on radio, but yeah, it needs to happen a little quicker. I think too, even with the way that women are used in sports on television, I think now we're seeing a lot less fewer women in like cocktail dresses, things right. like that. You know, like we're talking about sports here. It's a morning show. Like why do we look like we're going to a wedding at this point? Like we're the people that we're catering to are going to tailgate right now. They're wearing sweats and t-shirts and they're going with like a keg and they're like, you know, just eating like all sorts of crazy stuff. And why do we look like why are we in like 5-inch heels and parading around like we're at some type of like high social society event? Like we're talking about football. We should just be like casual and hanging out. And I think slowly that's happening more and more. And I'd love to see that.
Were those ever conversations that you had to have with the producers, whether it be at NFL Network, whether it be during your early times in Philadelphia on TV, where you just said, hey, listen, like whatever initial glance this is, like, let's remember who we're catering to here.
Always, always. That's something that I constantly battled with people about. And I think a lot of times, just because that was the model and that is the model still for a lot of places. And so I don't think people realize what they want or what shows should look like until sometimes they see it for the first time. And so I think that's why it's been so slow to change. But I understand like the formality too of a lot of these big places, especially when you have a big fancy studio. You know, you can't come in, everybody can't come in and like rip jeans. So right. It just doesn't look right. So I think slowly it's sort of changing in that like people are changing the entire vision of different shows. But yeah, like that's something that I constantly talked about, because it's like, even for the guys, why do the guys have to be like in really uncomfortable suits and ties talking about this? What does that do? I understand it does look nice, but it's also kind of odd, I think, from another point of view.
Yeah, I think it's totally dependent on the situation that you're in. Like, I get it why on a national broadcast you still have broadcasters in suits and ties and formal attire, but
100%.
You're right. Like, you know, if you're doing a morning show or even the post-game show that you guys are doing, like there can be a little bit more of a casual feeling towards it. So I just sort of think it's dependent on the situation. I think you're spot on about that.
And I think it's a lot of times too, it's nice when you can show a little bit more of your personality through like things that you're allowed to wear.
Right,
like
exactly.
I love when the guys, when the guys are able to wear like fun shoes with their suits, and then it's like, oh, like I didn't know you were a sneakerhead. This is great. Let's talk about your J's. Like it's just sort of like a fun way to express yourself. But at the same time, like on our Thursday show, I think it's fun that we're able to dress up for that, because it does feel like that feels like an event. Like
for
even
sure.
though we are at a football game, it's like a big production. It's a big deal. So it depends on the show. It depends on where you are. It depends on like so many different things, but it's nice to see a lot of those things changing. Like even our morning show at NFL Network, Good Morning Football, that I love the tone of that whole show. And I feel like they really owned it, and it feels more inclusive. It feels like you're just hanging out with a lot of your friends. And I don't know if it would have that same feel if it was more buttoned up and kind of stuffy.
Right. I feel like you already have that in SportsCenter. So if you're looking for something that's a little bit more of a hangout, I think you make a lot of really excellent points there. I wanted to ask you a question about a story that you told. I think it was with Lakeisha Wessling on her podcast, where when you were doing a lot of the early TV stuff over, I'm trying to remember whether it was at Fox or Comcast Sportsnet Philadelphia, about how when you were sort of one person banding all your work ahead of the newscast, ahead of the sports highlights, like you would basically tease a set of highlights on the other side of a break. And then, you know, those highlights and scripts you hadn't even had a chance to write yet. And that's a pretty bold move, especially on live TV.
Oh my God. I'm getting flashbacks right now. It was like, it honestly was the best training I could have ever received. And it was a lot of times on weekends, it would just be me, and I'd go in, I'd set all my game records. I would, a lot of times, like if we didn't have interns, I would log all the games. I would log like, you know, the time codes, like when somebody did something so I could go back and cut it later. I'd stack my rundown with all my shows. I'd build all my graphics. I'd cut all my video. I'd put together, I'd have to like listen to sound, like pressers and sound bites, and put all that in. And then write my scripts, all my hair and makeup, and then like run out. A game would be in progress, and I'd go out and I'd do the tease, and then something would happen and I would run back in. It would be like a 3-minute break, recut the highlights, repush them so then they were current, and then run back out and do the rest of the show. And it was just like so crazy. It was so insane. And when I first started that job, that was one where I really didn't quite know what I was doing, and I was really kind of just skating by with a lot of the stuff. And then little by little, it all started getting easier. And it's such a cliche, but I swear to God, I was like, oh my God, the game is slowing down. I'm starting to like see things better and figure it out. And I got really efficient. And by the end, I mean, I could throw stuff together with my eyes closed, and it was no problem. So by the time I got to NFL Network, I was like, wait, like you just want me to talk on camera and like throw you ideas for things? Like, do you want me to go pull some tape? Because I got plenty of time. This is crazy.
Well, when you joined NFL Network, and that was, I think, almost 6 years ago in 2014, did you talk to anybody there either before or right after you started that helped you get a feel for sort of what the job would be like and what the culture would be like there?
I didn't really know anybody that was there. I knew Brian Baldinger a little bit because I had worked with him in Philly, but it was just sort of in passing that I saw him. So it was really a leap of faith. I had, my husband and I had just bought a house in Philly like 4 months before, and I was going to quit TV altogether. I was kind of, I felt like I wasn't really going anywhere, and I was just, I felt stuck. And so at the beginning of 2014, I told my husband, if I'm not somewhere by the end of this year, that's somewhere different or somewhere I sort of want to be, even if it was still at the Fox affiliate that I was in Philly, just a different role there, then I was going to get out. So I like started my succession plan. I started a business with one of the photographers I worked with at Fox, and we started shooting weddings on the side and putting together like all these fun little videos and stuff. And then John and I bought a house, and we were kind of just going to like chill in Philly and just stay there. And so when the NFL called, it was really out of the blue, and they wanted to fly me out for this audition. And I was like, I had never been to LA before in my life. So I was like, yeah, I mean, of course, you want to fly me out to LA to audition for the NFL Network? Sure. And my husband and I convinced John to take off, and he came out with me too. And we kind of just, we bar hopped and kind of just toured around. And then I had my audition the next day, and I seriously thought I bombed it. And I ended up getting the job. And we were, John and I were bi-coastal for 2 years. So it was really weird. One of my best friends in the whole world, she had been living in Chicago, and she got offered a job in LA the same exact week I did. So oh, wow. We were like, yo, let's move in together. So I ended up like going from having my first ever house, like big home purchase, you know, your first time homeowner. I was painting the walls and everything with my husband. And then all of a sudden I was moving in with my best friend in Santa Monica with like 3 suitcases full of clothing and nothing else. So we did that for 2 years, and that was pretty crazy. And I wasn't sure what to expect at NFL Network. They only gave me a 1-year contract when I first started, and it was sort of like a flyer for both of us, for me and for them.
Wow. This was a 1-year contract. All of a sudden you're like bi-coastal with your husband. That's pretty remarkable that you guys were both like right from the very beginning on the same page. Cause that's not always the case in those types of situations.
Yeah. Well, it helps because John sort of does the same thing. And so he writes for The Ringer. And at the time he had a show in Philly. And so we were both kind of like, well, I don't know. This is, for him to quit his job and move out based on a 1-year contract at a place that I really didn't know about. I didn't know if I was going to like the role. I didn't know if they were going to like me, and I didn't know what my future was going to be like there. So we were like, let's just play it by ear and see what happens. Because with these kind of jobs and in this industry, you just go where the work is and you don't really have a choice otherwise. So it was a big leap of faith. It was a big risk. And I remember I was so stressed out right before I came out here. I moved out here because I was still in a contract at Fox at Philly, and they weren't going to let me out of my deal to move out here. And it came down to like the very last week right before I moved here. And so I was like, I don't know if I should be packing up my stuff and saying goodbye to everybody. I don't know if I should be like ready to quit my job here because I'm so angry that they're not letting me out of my contract. Like, I ended up giving myself an upper respiratory infection. So by the time I got to NFL, I didn't have a voice. And I was probably the worst case scenario to start a job where you're already like, I don't know if this is going to work out. But it ended up being okay.
Did you have a moment after, I don't know whether it was after that first year at NFL Network or within that first year, where you finally felt to yourself like, all right, I'm comfortable. I know what my role is. I know what it can be. I feel like I can keep growing here. Like, when did you sort of hit that moment where you knew that like, okay, this is a place I could see myself working for a long time?
Well, I feel like anytime you start a new job, I feel like the first year is kind of a feeling out process. I don't think I've ever really felt really comfortable until a year in somewhere.
Okay.
And my role at NFL and what I had been hired to do, it kept changing. So when they brought me in, it was for this thing called NFL Now, which is now the name of a show on the network, which Andrew Siciliano hosts. But when I first came in, it was this digital sort of concept where it was on-demand content for fans. So they could go on and select which teams that they wanted news from or segments or analysis or whatever. And then we would tape like 50 segments a day, like 52 or 3 minute segments a day on each team. And so that was really overwhelming at first because obviously I covered the Eagles and I knew the NFC East really well. And I was a football fan and I played fantasy for years and years. And so I knew all the big skill position players and stuff like that. But all of a sudden I was having to do like segments on the Titans O-line when they were really bad. And it was like such a kind of jarring experience to all of a sudden have to know all of these things about all 32 teams and both conferences and all these divisions. And not only do you have to know like, you know, player injuries and news, and you have to know sort of the zeitgeist of those teams and what people are into, what they're not, like nicknames. I mean, you really need to submerge yourself into so much of it. And it was just such a quick turnaround, and the amount of segments we were doing every day. In the end, that was another thing, sort of like me a little bit one man banding it in Philly, just the sheer number of reps that we were getting and the number of segments that we were just churning out every single day. It ended up being such a blessing in disguise because then it was almost like a farm system for the network because then they little by little, the people that were doing those segments, they were kind of cherry picking and then putting on different shows. So MJD was on it with me, and like me and MJD were doing crazy segments together. And I'm like Cole White was on it with us. And it was tough because it would go from, okay, we're doing like X's and O's. Like the first year was hardcore X's and O's where they wanted it kind of to be like earnest. And then it flipped around, I think the second or third year, and it ended up being, well, now we're going to do more comedy-based stuff, and we want it to be really loose and relaxed, but we didn't necessarily have the personnel to kind of pull off a lot of the stuff that they wanted us to pull off. And so there was a lot of turnover in terms of like the people that we were working with and then also the vision of what we were doing. And so it ended up being difficult to kind of figure out what my role was there. And it wasn't until they had me they started me on Good Morning Football on the weekend show. And because before that I was kind of filling in, I would do Total Access on Saturdays. I would do host like a fantasy show once a week. So they kind of were feeling me out in different places. And then once the weekend show came, that's when I kind of really felt comfortable and I knew that this was going to be a place that I wanted to stay and build a future with. And the morning show that we do on the weekends, that's actually done out of NFL Films in Jersey. And it's with such an amazing group of people. Everybody is so cool and so chill and so laid back. I was like, yes, sign me up for this for life. I'm in. Let's go.
That's awesome. And especially you're talking about the reps and how it's just, it keeps a certain level of comfort there. And I'm glad you brought that up. And I know that you've been super generous with your time. So I just have a couple more questions for you.
Listen, I got nothing else going on. This is my off day.
Well, there you go. Oh, I appreciate that even more, hanging out with us on your off day. So with a lot of those reps, you guys found yourself in a pretty precarious situation on Thursday night for the postgame show. And you knew that there were going to be a lot of eyeballs on you after the Myles Garrett helmet swinging incident. So can you take us a little bit inside the conversations that you and Steve Smith and Joe Thomas and Michael Irvin were having both together as well as with your producers? As you get set, like the game is pretty much over, then all of a sudden this completely this changes the entire narrative of how you guys are going to put together this post game show. So what was all of that like?
It was crazy. I'm so glad you asked about this. So obviously Thursday night is a totally different beast, and it's such a fun show to do. It's incredible to be able to go to all these different stadiums and meet all of these fans and see the different fan bases. And it's one of the most exciting things I do. And that game in particular, every week we're watching the game and we're trying to figure out what storylines that we're going to talk about and kind of how the flow of the game is going. And a lot of times I'll end up taking a crazy amount of notes and I never even end up using any of them. But for that game in particular, I took a ton of notes. And you know, it was sort of before the whole thing happened with Myles Garrett, the game was pretty much in the bag, and I had all these fun storylines that I was going to talk about, and I had all these great stats to back it up, and I felt really good about it. And so we're out on the field, and this happens literally as they're pulling the stage out on the field. They have this stage that's like an accordion. So it shrinks down super thin, and then they can like literally just raise it up, and they can do it all in about like a minute and a half. And so they're bringing the stage out onto the field, and all of a sudden this fight is happening at the very other end of the field. So we can't see anything that's going on, and they won't replay it in the stadium. And so we're all like, all we can hear, we have our IFBs in, so we could hear the broadcast, so we can hear Troy and Joe being like, oh my God, look at that. You know, there's going to be some suspensions. And we're like, what is happening? Like, where can we see this?
Right.
And so finally there was a monitor that they were able to set up, and we ran over and they were able to like replay some of it from the truck, but it kept cutting off at like different moments. They weren't able to like get the full highlight for us. And so we kept trying to like see what was going down. And then finally they were able to like play it in full. And this was like moments before we were going on. And so there was like no time to talk about really anything. There wasn't any time to talk about how we were really going to handle it or what we were going to say. It was just like, we just kind of were reacting almost in real time, which was, I've never really had a show like that before. I mean, a lot of the times when we're reacting in real time to something that just happened, it's something good. It's a game-winning touchdown. It's Philip Rivers beating the Chiefs last year at Arrowhead with playoff implications, and he's giddy on the set. We've never had a situation where something happens at the end of the game that is so negative and so depressing, sort of. And scary. And it was a really different type of show that we had that I've never, it was almost like kind of using a muscle that I've never really used before. And so it was really interesting and kind of crazy because the show ended up going really long too. So normally we end up having a pretty quick turnaround. And I also didn't think that we were going to be able to get any guests either. I wasn't sure that the Browns were going to let any of their players come on the show after that. But then Jarvis and Odell came on the show. And so it was kind of difficult to, in real time, figure out, okay, like this just happened. And how, like, they just won the game though too. And it was a very weird kind of somber environment with them. And it was hard to sort of navigate that interview because you want to ask them about the actual game too, but what just happened was such a big deal and has so many ripple effects for Myles Garrett, for the Browns in general. I mean, it for obviously Mason Rudolph. And the fact that those two teams are playing in, 2 weeks now?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like that in Pittsburgh, I can't even imagine what that game is going to be like. So it was a challenging show, but I feel like I'm better for sort of having been involved with it. But it was a really difficult kind of situation when it happened.
Well, speaking honestly, the fact that all of you guys carried it the way that you did, there wasn't any sort of indication that you hadn't seen a limited cut of the footage. So salute to all of you guys. It was a really interesting, really compelling show, and especially in an era now where everything is digital, where you're seeing highlights pop up within minutes on your phone. Like, I can tell mm-hmm. you that, at least from my perspective, watching the game and watching all that unfold just as an NFL viewer and as a fan, like, I had to stay for postgame. I had to see what the reaction was going to be like. And I also thought, you know, it probably helped that Baker Mayfield really set the tone as to what the team's reaction to that situation was going to be. And I think because of that, I think mm-hmm. it allowed for Jarvis and for Odell and Freddie Kitchens and the rest of the Browns to speak pretty frankly about it, knowing that, okay, it came from the quarterback down, that they were completely, you can't advocate for something like this. And so naturally, even though it was going to come up in conversation, it didn't feel like it was something that had to be hidden.
Right. And we were actually pretty surprised when we heard Baker say the things that he did, and surprised, but also a little relieved, I think, too.
For sure.
That was such a mature way to handle it, and it was the right way to handle it, just from like a human being standpoint as well. It was such a jarring thing to see once we did all really see the full extent of like all the different angles of everything happening, that it was just a wild, wild kind of scene, especially at the end of that game, especially that they were winning that game and it was at the very end, and it was just so out of nowhere almost that it happened. And I understand that, you know, whatever happened with Mason on the ground, with Myles Garrett, I mean, he's not completely innocent, but the reaction was not warranted from what he did. And so it was just, I was really happy and really, like I said, relieved that Baker kind of handled it the way he did, because I think then we were all able to kind of continue doing it the way that we wanted to do it, the way that handle it. We were all sort of on the same page, even though nobody talked, obviously. It was just like everybody was kind of in lockstep with it.
All right, before I let you go, and there's so much more that I could probably discuss with you about just that night and the show in general, but I want to switch it up a little bit more positive. You're traveling with a lot of pretty fun personalities on that Thursday night show, with Joe Thomas and Steve Smith and Michael Irvin, and even Steve and Mike occasionally have a little bit of that rivalry together. Any good stories from your travels together? Any, you know, goofy stuff, crazy stories that maybe the public hasn't had a chance to hear yet that you could engage with us? It doesn't have to be anything completely. No, it's just something fun about them.
I work with a bunch of lunatics who I just love so much.
Oh, good.
And it's like they're the absolute best. When we were in, I think it was Denver, Steve was like, hey, like, you know, let's go grab some food or whatever after the game. I asked somebody, you know, for a recommendation for a good spot. And so we were like, okay, cool. And he's like, we can, you know, it's just right around the corner. We can walk there. And so after the game, we're like, okay, let's go. And as it turns out, this place is like 20 minutes away. And we're like, okay, no problem. So we all hop in Uber. We go over and like, we get to the place. And it's like, it is the most college bar I've ever seen in my life. And we get to the door and the guy was like, yeah, sorry. Like ladies and couples only. And we were like, oh, like, okay, cool, no problem. And I guess somebody recognized Steve, and so they let us all in. And I have no idea where Steve got this recommendation from, but I don't know if I'm gonna ever take a recommendation on a bar again from Steve. it was kind of ridiculous, but there are a lot of stories. I just don't know if I can tell them on this podcast. But
okay.
We can talk afterwards, maybe.
All right, fair enough.
I'll
hold you to that.
I love all of those guys are so fun to work with. They're so amazing. Everything that you see on camera is exactly how they are in real life. Irv will show up to our meeting and he'll be like just coming straight from his workout, and he just like talks and is like sort of like preaches to himself while he's like getting his eggs and things. And it's just like, it's kind of a bizarro world and I love it. It's so much fun.
Colleen, thanks so much for joining us. Remember, you guys can catch Colleen Wolf on NFL Game Day Kickoff on Thursdays, Good Morning Football Weekend on Saturdays, and NFL Total Access Endgame Monday nights after Monday Night Football. And make sure you guys are following her on Twitter as well, at Colleen Wolf. Thanks for your time. This was a lot of fun. Enjoyed the stories, enjoyed the perspective, and hope we can do this again soon.
Thank you so much. Anytime. You just let me know.